Metallica, here they come, the kings of metal!
Wanna burn! This is Jon from Bukasa, you're listening to Metal Up Your Podcast.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And this is episode 260, and we're going to finish out the old Masterclass series with part three. And Clint, happy graduation day.
Yeah, today I was going to do the Independence Day speech, but
I mean, go for it, dude. Let's do it.
I only know the last part where he says, today we celebrate our Independence Day.
We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today we celebrate our Independence Day.
That's all I know. It's a big speech by, who's that guy? Who's the Independence Day guy that plays the president?
Bill Pullman,
right.
Yeah.
He gives a riveting speech, I believe, because he's prepared to go into battle as well to fight these aliens. He's
got
his bomber jacket on. And I think his assistant's like, sir, you bitch, you can't go. And he's like, I'm a soldier first, right? Am I getting
something
this right?
Like that, yeah. He can't not do it.
Yeah, he's going to go in. He's going to go in with his people. It's an inspiring story. And of course, you got Will Smith. You got Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, yeah. Jeff Goldblum
and others.
Yes. Randy Quaid was in it.
Randy Quaid's in it. Yeah, he makes the greatest sacrifice of all.
He makes the greatest sacrifice of all. And that's the way they figure out how to take down these big alien ships.
While smoking a cigar in a spaceship.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It's pretty amazing. Anyway, this isn't an Independence Day podcast. It's a graduation day podcast because we're finishing our master class. We have the last three chapters to talk through, plus the five performances, which I thought were quite good.
Yeah.
And we're back from tour. We finished our two-month tour with Morgan Wade and Lucero. It feels good to be home.
It really does. It does. Yeah, we got a few shows this month, but nothing crazy. So mostly home time for me and Clint. For him, that includes, you know, obviously daddy-daughter time as well, which we all got dropped off yesterday. It was really cool to see your daughter come run over to you and get real excited that you're back in town.
Well, she has this thing where she loves me, and when I'm not home, she misses me.
That's a weird concept.
I take all of that as, well, you know, that's not always the case.
Yeah.
And, I take that as a sign that things are going okay at home. Yeah, I'm glad to be home. I'm about to be gone for another 5 days, but I'm not really thinking about that much right now.
Yes.
Just thinking about enjoying being home. Let's knock out some of the housekeeping. There's not a lot going on. Metallica played a pretty weird show this weekend. I had to look up what the hell it is because I didn't understand what it was. But they played during the Triller Fight Club's Triad Combat. Did you know what this was?
Not necessarily. No, I mean, to me, it sounded like it was basically like Fight Night, you know?
Well, I don't even know what that is.
Like, what's Fight Night? Like if there was like a UFC match or a boxing match or something. That's what it initially sounds like based off the title.
That's basically what it is. It's like I'll read a thing about it for a second, but it's they did it on November 27th at the Globe Life Field, which is home of the Texas Rangers. It was a pay-per-view event, and they did three sets because it's structured around these fights, I guess. They open with Fuel and Ride the Lightning. Then they did a pre-main event set, which was Puppets, Nothing Else Matters, and Sandman. Okay?
Yeah.
Then they did a closing set, which is pretty awesome. Whiplash, Memory Roam, Sad Creep, Unforgiven Bells, Whiskey, Fade to Black, Battery, and Seek. Here's what this is upon my copious research today.
Okay.
Triad Combat is a revolutionary new combat team sport which incorporates boxing and MMA rules in an aggressive, fast-paced manner with the fighters competing in a specially designed triangular ring over two-minute rounds featuring professional boxers competing against professional mixed martial arts fighters. The specific motto of leveling the playing field between the two sports utilizing crossover gloves and withholding allowed is meant to offer boxing and MMA fighters an even battleground where neither opponent has a greater advantage.
I would think MMA is already inclusive of boxing because it's mixed martial arts. I don't know. I guess boxing is considered a martial art, but they changed the shape of the ring, it sounds like.
Well, it's a triangle.
Hey, a triangle. Next, it will be a rectangle.
Regarding Metallica's involvement with the event, bassist Robert Trujillo told MMA Junkie, "It's pretty exciting because I almost feel like the type of music that we do, that Metallica does, kind of warrants itself into the combat sports world. I'm a big fan of MMA and actually boxing because I grew up watching a lot of the classic matches through the 70s and 80s and watched early MMA. I could always relate to the two universes being edgy, between edgy music and edgy sporting events. I think it's a perfect fit."
Well, it's like the great James Hetfield once said back in the early 80s, "No life till Thriller Fight Club." Going to kick some ass.
Exactly.
Tonight.
Well, I hope I saw that several of our people were there. I hope they had a good time. It seems like a weird thing to me, mm-hmm. but whatever.
Do
each his own.
Yeah.
I'm not much into the MMA world. I find it mildly nauseating to watch like broken bones and blood and shit.
Yeah.
Now in a horror movie, no problem because it's a story and it's fake.
I prefer a boxing match.
I never could
if I'm going to
open on that either.
I don't actively watch boxing or MMA, but if there's like there's some big fight or whatever, like the day after, I'll watch some highlights just for fun, and that's about as deep as I go with boxing.
I'm sure it's a very nuanced, artistic sport. But the sort of, it harkens back to me, like just sort of a gladiatorial, watch the lions eat the Christian shit, watch people beat each other up stuff. That's not quite my favorite thing. But alas, we're not here to talk about my favorite things, unless we're talking about Metallica.
Well, then, hey, they are a few of my favorite things.
Let's knock this out real quick, too. Thank you to our new patron, Alex Browns. We appreciate all of you who support the show. Really means a lot. Goes a long way. It's hard to put all this stuff together as consistently as we do it. So the support really means a lot to us. Thank you. And, of course, you get a bunch of stuff over there. You're going to hear a commercial for it later. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. We're on all the socials, Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube. We have a Black Album box set that we're going to give away that we've had for months, but we went on tour.
That's right.
Hard to coordinate that when you're on tour. So I'm guessing it's going to be like a nice Christmas thing that, by the way, we're going to give to a patron, a lucky patron.
I mean, listen.
Somewhere in the world.
Tis the season of giving, correct? And not only that, but we got our water bottle giveaway coming up, too.
Now, you want to explain what that is? Because
yeah.
When we say we're giving away a water bottle, that doesn't sound so great.
It doesn't. Yeah. It's not just like a plastic Dasani empty water bottle.
We're giving away a used Evian water bottle that you can spit sunflower seeds
well,
into.
Well, used on the bus, on tour. So if anyone out there knows Orca Coolers, this is a kick-ass cooler company based here in Nashville. I've got some friends that work there. They made me my own personal water bottle. And by that, I mean, it's a metal water bottle. You've got a couple now, Clint. And they did some custom Metal Up Your Podcast ones. So these are like crazy sturdy. You put water and ice in that thing, leave it overnight, it'll still be cold and frozen the next morning.
They're basically like, if you people are familiar with the Yeti coolers.
Yeah, this would be like the competitor to Yeti. But they were super kind and gracious to make a couple custom Metal Up Your Podcast water bottles. We each got one, and we have two to give away on the show.
They're like big-ass canteens.
Yeah, I think they're like 40 ounces maybe.
If you put like a... Yeah, if you put something cold in it, it's going to stay cold. Something hot in it, it stays hot. It's actually pretty cool. I'm going to be using it at my, we do a freeze out winter camp situation in January. So
yeah.
I'll be taking it to that.
Hell yeah.
I guess like look on the socials for details. I've yet to come up with all the machinations for how we're going to give all this away. But needless to say, we've give shit away this entire podcast, so we'll figure it out.
It'll happen.
All right. The easiest way to get a hold of us is through the emails, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. We love hearing from the family. We're going to do that now in what we lovingly refer to as the email corner.
Let's go. Our first email is from our friend Dave Ferraro. He says, "What's up, brothers? We're less than 3 weeks away now. I was just curious what your plans were for the San Francisco weekend. Hoping to see you there. Dave Ferraro, Boston, Massachusetts, New Jersey."
Well, it's not looking like we're going to make it. Or at least I'm not going to make it. Now, we have tickets, but we have the insurance on the tickets. I'm probably going to try to get the refund just because we have a show that weekend. And it's just too much to try to figure out how to get there, how to get back, and how to make sure that I don't miss a show that's actually my job to be at.
Yeah, it's just too close. If it were the previous weekend, it'd be a no-brainer for us, you know, but it's cutting it too close in our world. And, you know, especially right around the holidays too with flights. I mean, if we got stuck in some airport for a full day, we could potentially miss our job. So we can't risk that.
All right. Dominic B. writes and says, "Morning, Clint, Ethan, and Paul. I know he's around there somewhere. First off, wishing you and your families a happy Thanksgiving. Thank you. You as well. I had the pleasure to have some awesome first-time experiences with my son. I went to my first Boston Bruins game when I took him to see his first, first time at a Renaissance Fair. And thanks to you guys, I broke out my record player and listened to vinyl for the very first time in my life with him.
Awesome.
I gave him the choice between Kill 'Em All, which I had removed from my wedding picture for the first time since I got the record. He says, it's cool, she gets me. Or the Black Album. Of course, he chose Sandman. It was a really cool moment to share that experience with him, even if all it was to him was listening to his favorite song. So for that, he says, thank you.
Oh.
He says, I'm excited and a little bummed out. Yesterday was the last day at my old office job. I start my new job doing what I love, which is emergency patient care. On Tuesday, what I'm bummed about is I won't be able to spend 8 hours of my day listening to my favorite podcast. Honestly, the only podcast I follow, which I didn't even do yesterday because of the show itself. He says, I have seen the art of two cute zombie Clint and Ethan fighting over a burrito, but never knew the context. Yesterday, I made it to episode 110, the year two party Nashville review, which happened on my birthday that year. You guys started to introduce what I assumed was the origin story of the burrito art, and in my head is zombie Clint and Ethan with the burrito. Almost lost my shit laughing, and we only made it to where the guy, since I forgot who, put his burrito on stage. I had to shut it off, compose myself with load. And I got back into it after I left work. Is it talking about Mike?
Yeah, Met Club Mike.
Speaking of Load, it's not my favorite album. And I always consider Reload as my favorite of the two because, well, Fuel is awesome. And of course, Memory, blah, blah, blah. We know the list. However, the only album I regularly listen to front to back is Load. They all get their spin time, but Load is the most consistent, which I think says something about that album, at least to me. He says, if you don't mind, I'll riff a little bit about my job because it's something that mentally is so positive for me. I was a lieutenant for a volunteer fire department. And an EMT cardiac, he says it's basically paramedic junior and only exists in Rhode Island. I did that for 5 years, and while on vacation, me and my family were in a car accident that ultimately ended my career working on the back of trucks. My wife and son were fine, which is all that matters. I was forced to retire from the fire department, which crushed my soul, and to make it worse, later that year, I lost my chief to leukemia. I had a hard mental battle trying to find my place in the world again, lucky enough to have found the job that I just left. Once I was able to return to work, because it did allow me to get the help I needed to put my life back together in order and to figure out where to go from here. Now I start working in an emergency room while in school to become a respiratory therapist. I feel like the last of my healing is on the way. That's awesome, dude.
Cool.
He says, sorry for the long email. Sometimes you just got to let it go. Keep up the good work. I'll be listening as much as I can. Tom from Rhode Island, definitely not New Jersey, about 10 miles south from Newark.
That's definitely New Jersey.
Let me tell everyone out there to do something real quick. Take a look out your nearest window. That's New Jersey.
That's New Jersey, yeah.
So it's a geographical oddity, but nonetheless, everywhere is New Jersey. So yeah, it's nice that it's 10 miles south of New Jersey in New Jersey.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's nice that it's definitely not New Jersey in New Jersey.
Gosh. It makes sense. It makes so much sense.
Well, listen, dude, I'm glad that you're figuring some shit out and that things are getting a little easier for you.
Yeah.
We've all had our ups and downs, homie. That's life.
It is, man. We're glad you're on the other end of it and you're looking at a new job and going to school for being a respiratory therapist. That's pretty badass. And yeah, we're happy for you, man.
Look, your respiratory system has feelings too.
It really does.
And, you know, your respiratory system, you know, needs to lay down on a nice couch and show you on the doll.
That's right.
Where it was touched. So,
yeah.
You know, they need therapists as well.
And we're happy you're going to be able to do that for everyone's respiratory system. Tom, thank you so much for writing in. Next email is from Cyrus Nabors. Hello, brothers. I'm sitting here on my porch listening to the Morgan Wade album and enjoying a couple fingers of some Jameson. I hope your tour is going well, and thank you so much for turning me on to Morgan. She is a wonderful musician. Agreed.
Now, hold on a second.
Okay.
That's either some sort of way to say that he's drinking whiskey, or he's eating the fingers of someone named Jameson. Ooh. And he's a psychopathic serial killer.
I did not think about it that way. I'm glad you brought
enjoying
that up.
A couple of fingers of some Jameson.
So he doesn't even know it's some Jameson. It's not a specific Jameson that maybe he knew.
Well, maybe he only hunts Jamesons.
That's crazy.
Here's the thing. What are fingers of Jameson? Is that a way to say drinking whiskey? Is that mean?
Yeah, like if you do two fingers of Jameson, it's like basically like pour that much. You never heard that term before?
No.
I'll have two fingers of Jameson, please. And so it's about two fingers width of
looks like an ounce. It looks like maybe an ounce or an ounce and a half.
Well, I have big fingers, maybe a little more. I don't know. Three fingers of Jameson, please.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah. Learning something new every day.
You actually, yeah, you do, man.
I actually prefer the serial killer narrative.
I mean, that still could be true. We have no idea. Time will tell. We just got to contact the authorities after this.
And, you know, in this cultural moment, everyone just likes their ideas of things more than actual things. So I'm choosing to believe the narrative that I just made up, that I have no evidence for, that Cyrus here is a serial killer who lives in Durango, and he hunts only people named Jameson, and he eats their fingers, and he doesn't know their last names because it's just some Jameson.
Maybe he doesn't actually kill them. Maybe he just cuts fingers off and that's it.
Or, you know what? Let's keep taking it into PG-13 and land.
Okay.
Maybe he's just sucking on those fingers.
Yeah, little finger popsicles.
And maybe it's consensual.
Maybe some Jameson person kindly donated two fingers.
Maybe Sum is his first name, and it's an actual person named Sum Jameson.
Greetings, Mr. Sum Jameson. Might I have a finger or two?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he says a couple. He's enjoying them. All right. Well, okay. We've solved this problem, Cyrus. I had dialed the cops, and we're sending them to your place, but I'll call them off.
Yeah, that's fine.
Because I don't have all the facts.
Well, maybe they'll come to fruition soon. He goes on to say, I know this whole pandemic thing threw your line of work into a tailspin. And I'm so glad you all both landed on your feet and with a great tour and a great artist like Morgan. Thanks again for everything you've given to the podcast, new music you've introduced me to, etc. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving and hope your tour continues to be awesome. Find some great vinyl on your days off on tour and find some great food. Well, thanks again. Stay safe, Cyrus. We did all those things. The tour is now over. We bought some vinyl. You know, we bought some cassettes. And we ate some great food.
Yes, we did. All right. Alex Browns, who's a new patron, says, hey, Ethan and Clint, I've only been listening to your podcast for 1 week now. I've been catching up to your early podcast, going in order. I've skipped a couple of episodes, which I'll go back to later, but I dug into most of your first 20. Heard about your show from Aaron Martell, Ridiculous Rock Record Reviews Podcast.
Okay.
What a title.
Yeah.
The title of that podcast is a podcast.
Wow.
It takes a whole podcast to get the title out.
Yeah, it does.
He says, since the remastered version of the Black Album releases of the live CDs on their website, I've been digging into them pretty heavily. Metallica isn't my favorite band as Iron Maiden is, but Metallica's definitely up there, influencing me to listen to Slayer, Sepultura, and death metal. Keep up the great work. Look forward to the rest of your episodes. Love the Torben Ulrich and Dave Mustaine guest appearances. Alex.
Hey, Alex, you're welcome. Dude, speaking of a Mustaine impression, I was going through my phone this morning trying to find this video to send to a friend, and all of a sudden I see like this little Back to the Future thing, and it's the scene with the road, where we're going, we don't need road scene, and I overdubbed my Mustaine over Doc Brown.
Mm-hmm.
It made me chuckle this morning. That's all I got to say about that.
Well, aren't you just a little cutie pie over there cracking yourself up?
Just crack myself up, sucking on some fingers.
I'd love to just walk through the mind of Ethan Luck for a day. I imagine it's much like it's like a Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Yeah.
It's just a nice land where you just frolic around and you just chuckle.
I'm just constantly looking for everlasting gobstoppers.
Yeah.
And fizzy lifting drink.
Yeah.
Because then I could fly to your house and I can get there so much faster than driving.
Right. Exactly.
I'll keep everyone updated on that. Our last email is from Billy. He says, what's up, brothers? I was just listening to the videos podcast, and I was wondering, could we expect a Cinema Masters episode for Coming to America and all the other movies you talk about? P.S. The video episodes are epic. I mean, we have talked about doing like a Zoom hang where we all watch Coming to America or Back to the Future or something like that. We have not done that, but, you know, the future is unwritten.
All right. MetalUpYourPodcastShow@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys. You can write in. And perhaps we'll even read it on an episode, perhaps even on an episode that you're listening to right now. I don't know.
Who knows?
And no one does.
Nobody does.
So we're going to hear a Patreon commercial. If you can support the show, we encourage you to, so that you can spiritually absolve yourself of all the enjoyment that you've gotten over the years from the hours of work that we've created. And if you can't, that's also fine too. And we're going to talk about the rest of this masterclass.
Let's go.
Hey everyone, Clint and Ethan here, and we want to tell you about a little thing called Patreon. Patreon is an easy and interactive way to support the people who make the things that you love.
For as little as $5 a month, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast can continue to grow in quality and content. That's equivalent to a cup of coffee or a beer once a month.
Not only is it easy and affordable, but we've made it a priority since day one to give back to our Patreon community. We've given away deluxe box sets, rare vinyl, Black and Whiskey,
concert tickets to S&M2 and Slane Castle,
all four of our Cover Our World Black and EPs, 26 quarantine covers, and Lunar Satan demos,
invitations to exclusive Zoom happy hours, the ability to ask our guests like Jay Weinberg of Slipknot, Lizzie Hale, and members of the Metallica crew your very own questions,
and eligibility for our Metal Tales series, where you can be a guest on Metal Up Your Podcast and tell us all about a notable Metallica show you've been to.
Subscribe to Patreon today and immediately get access to years worth of bonus content.
Thank you for supporting the people who make the things that you love. Peace.
Adios.
I can't talk about it anymore. It's giving me a headache.
Here, take two of these.
Ah, new print. Little. Yellow. Different.
Okay, so I have the chapters up here. So we got three more left, and then we got some of the performances. Number 12, putting together an album, which says, Metallica teaches the nuts and bolts of making an album, including how to sequence songs to create balance and the process for moving multiple songs forward at the same time. So we're going to dip into this. We encourage you to do what we've done in the last two episodes. If you have access to this masterclass, maybe give it a little peekaboo so that you'll have some context for what we're going to talk about. We're basically just going to break it down. We can't play excerpts from it because Metallica's wanting you to pay those cold, hard 180 bones for it.
That's right, yeah.
And we want to be respectful of the commerce involved here.
Exactly.
So, but we will be sort of breaking it down and talking about it and giving you our hot takes, as they say. That's what the kids say.
Yeah, hot takes coming at you live soon.
Our hot TikToks.
our hot Insta TikToks.
All right, so we'll be back in a second.
Let's do it.
You live it or lie it. You live it or lie it.
Okay, well, what did you think about chapter 12, putting together an album?
Putting together an album, I actually enjoyed a lot of this stuff. One of the things that happens pretty quickly in this this episode or whatever is part, I like that Kirk says that... an album is a microcosm of everything going on in our lives. And James kind of follows it up with the albums are life for us. It reiterated the passion these dudes have to make music. And it might take 5 to 8 years sometimes between records, but they really do put their heart and souls into each album, whether you're a fan of that album or not.
Yes. That's a take of that.
That's kind of what I
interpreted as a lot of kind of woo woo filler. I don't think it makes much sense under a lot of scrutiny.
Yeah.
It's a collection of 10 songs that they recorded.
Yeah.
Is it a microcosm of their entire lives? I think maybe the tours maybe are more microcosms of their lives.
Well, he says the microcosm of everything going on in our lives in that era, I guess, is what he's trying to explain.
Yeah. I'm not sure that's true. I mean, is that true for the records you make?
It can be sometimes. I think it's more song to song than it is album to album.
Right.
You know, I might write about something that happened 6 years ago or something, you know.
But maybe that's kind of what you're dealing with.
Yeah, exactly. Or what I dealt with in the past or things like that. And some things are just hypothetical. But
I can see it making more sense for James, who writes the songs, you know.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's hard. I think this whole premise is hard because I think that whatever the deal was where they were like, Metallica, do you want to do a masterclass? They're like, yeah. I mean, people like those. We're promoting an album. I've been a successful band for 40 years. I just think that they're ultimately set up to try to explain stuff that's hard to explain.
Yeah, and hard to pull off. I mean, you know, they've been a band for 40 years. It's like, you know, some kid sitting there watching this isn't going to be like, this is all going to happen to me too. You know, it's all a gamble.
And it's all like any interview they do where they're promoting something. It's just there's just so much filler. There's just so much stuff that like sounds good. But when you're like, well, what does that mean? You're like, oh, it doesn't, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, to me, this is like most of these. There's maybe 10 to 20% of stuff that I really liked. I did really like when James was talking about how what they try to do at HQ is make sure that even though it is a place where they work, it's also a place filled with inspiration.
Yeah.
And my studio is very much like that. Like, you know, I have guitar pedals from when I was a kid. I have all my instruments. I have posters of bands and movies that I love. It's basically like a room I wish I could have had as a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, most of the things that I wanted as a kid are available to me now. That's why I have 200 cassettes on my walls.
Yeah, exactly.
And so
HQ1 over here is the same thing. I mean, you know, it's a good thing to surround yourself with inspiration, whether you're a musician or a painter or photographer or whatever, you know, I mean, I would hate if my studio was just a plain, you know, white walled room with just a computer and two speakers. Like, that would just be very stale.
Yeah. I've written in rooms and been in rooms that are like very minimalistic and they're like very clean and sleek. And I kind of get that too. Like, someone could argue that, like, you know, you declutter the room you're in so that you can kind of declutter your mind so you can create.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've had those conversations with people. But for me, I like being able to like anywhere I look in this room is something funny or interesting.
Yeah, same.
Whether it's an Aleister Crowley book or I have a Peter Criss pin on a coaster that's a Metal Up Your Podcast coaster. Wrapped around that coaster are my two Whiplash armbands from when I got the Whiplash experience on the Hardwire tour. So, you know, I've got a little guitar pedal here that doesn't even work, but I bought it because I thought it was going to work with my shit, but it turned out not to. But it's got Nikola Tesla on it,
who's
one of my favorite scientists. So anyway,
I'm looking over here right now and I'm seeing is a Clint Wells and Paul Moat guitar pick. So talk about inspiration.
Yeah, well, there you go. You win. They talk about striving for a balanced album. I did think this was funny. So they take Puppets, for example, and Lars is basically saying, like, our albums tell a story and we have a template. And,
right.
You know, it's a template we all know. They start thrashy. They have a kind of a ballad thing. They end thrashy. But he describes Puppets as a mid-tempo song.
I know. I thought that was funny. And even Disposable Heroes, he's like, oh, that one's kind of mid-tempo, kind of fast. I'm like, kind of fast?
I'm like, damn, dude. And he does say, like, in our world, this is how we describe them. But I'm like, man, if Master of Puppets is mid-tempo.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, for real. I did like that he was comparing the song styles to like different acts of a movie, you know, or a play or something, you know, that where it does take you on this journey. And their albums do that. I mean,
yeah,
you know, especially, you know, albums 2, 3, and 4, where you have the instrumental track in there as well. And it was a very similar layout style stylistically, where it's like, you know, open with the thrasher, then maybe a mid-tempo, then the ballads number 4, all that stuff. I did love that part.
Yeah, but again, I mean, that just seems like common sense.
It is common sense.
If you ask any artist, like, hey, so, you know, you've got this collection of 10 songs. Do you want to just throw them on a dartboard to sequence them, or do you want to tell a story?
Yeah.
It's like, well, I don't know. I'm like, who out there needed to hear that, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious, too. Like, I would love to see maybe numbers or something, but, like, is it mostly hardcore fans buying this thing? Or are there actual, like, maybe casual fans that are like, I don't know much about this band, but I would like to learn more. I'd imagine it's more hardcore fans just because they just want to see any content that they put out. But because, a lot of the stuff coming up is just, you know, stuff we all know already.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Like, you know, when Lars was talking about, you know, they still need an opening song on Hardwired, and he brings it up to the guys and blah, blah, blah. And they show some clips from HQ from that era. It's kind of like, that's cool, you know, but we've seen that for the last 5 years.
Well, they're even referencing the YouTube clips from the making of Hardwired that are like free, you know? I did like that, though. I liked that, and this is where you see some of Lars's songwriting. I guess we're going to call it songwriting value. It really is just more like production and arrangement value, but he's like, hey, we have a mission to find the opening track for this album, and he basically was saying, I want another Battery. I want Battery. Short, fast, thrashy. And they're like, okay, well, let's go look at the riff tapes. And, you know, he's kind of the one that went and found the riffs that became Hardwired, which is cool. I guess that might not have happened if he hadn't done that.
Right.
I did find it interesting that, like, you see some of Mike Gillies in there, who's a friend of the show, who we had on the show. And he's the one who even named it, all that shit. He's the one who named it Riff Charge.
Yeah.
Which is what the Hardwired riff
was.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
And I do like when Lars was like, you know, we had a part of that we thought was going to be a solo. But then James started singing over it, and it was fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, we're turned a little upside down on what we thought the song was.
Yeah, they had to like add a section for Kirk to solo. I actually there was two things I didn't really know about that song in particular about James was that he basically like kind of just improvised a verse over what would have been the solo section. They're like, well, we got to figure that out now. But and I'm glad he did, because that's such a great part of that song.
Yeah, and that resonated with me. Like, that's what happens in songs. You think you know what it is, but you don't really know what it is, because it's this ever evolving kind of nebulous thing that you're kind of just chasing it. You know, that's really where the work comes in. I think you have to like give yourself a good environment and a good team and have a good attitude and be ready. The practical part of like digging in and working is really just being available to chase those moments.
Yes, totally.
Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. And the other thing I loved kind of bouncing off that is that when James is at HQ and he's like in his vocal booth area kind of explaining how he does vocals.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't realize that he does is, I mean, I knew he obviously, and this is very common, you're doing five or six takes of a song and then, you know, engineer / producer is going to comp it, you know, meaning taking the best of the best and piecing it all together to make the best vocal possible. And then James talks about coming back like 3 to 5 days later and trying to beat that comp.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Or you perform the comp. I've done that before lots of times where you have someone sing, or if I'm in a time crunch, I'll have an artist do verse one 6 times. Mm-hmm. Then we'll go. And then if we're in verse world, and like, because typically verse 3 melodies, not too different than verse 1 melody, we'll stay in verse world. And then I'm like, hey, you ready to hit this chorus? Then we do the chorus and I playlist it where I just, there's like 10 versions of mm-hmm. it, and you make a comp and you make the best version of it. But sometimes a comp sounds like a comp.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times it doesn't, you know. I think people would be shocked to see the edits on their favorite records.
Right. Yeah. You know? Oh yeah, for sure. It was cool to hear him though, just talking about, you know, beating that comp and then talking specifically about, you know, the tone of your voice, like the percussiveness of your voice. And I love that he said, you know, you need to find the character in your voice.
I made that note too. He says having character in your voice is more important than range, which I could not agree with more.
Yeah, agreed.
He's talking about impact. He's talking about phrasing. He's talking about enunciating. Sometimes those things beat it being technically right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and there's plenty of great examples out there of people that aren't, you know, maybe technically good singers, or like, you know, Bob Dylan's a good example of like, he wasn't necessarily known as like this, you know, amazing singer, but guess what? He had character. He had great songs. He had great lyrics. You know, I mean,
yeah, I mean, you know, arguably the greatest of all the things you just mentioned. Greatest right. character in his voice.
Yeah.
Greatest songs, the greatest lyrics.
You just know that it's him, you know?
Well, he, you know, he's weird though, because he had a period in the late 60s where he sang completely differently.
Yeah.
He basically crooned, and he actually does have a really beautiful voice.
Throw my ticket out the window. Throw my suitcase out there too. Throw my troubles out the door. I don't need them anymore. Cause tonight I'll be staying here with you.
But he's a chameleon. I mean, he shapeshifts.
Yeah.
You ought to check out Nashville Skyline. He made it here.
Yeah, yeah.
And in that record, he sings unrecognizably. Like, it does not sound like Bob Dylan. It's
right.
Really, it's actually really weird.
I need to dive into that one.
To hear. That one and John Wesley Harding, he both made here.
Yeah.
And they're both really stripped down, really like folky country.
Those are the ones where, like, Nashville Skyline is where he basically, like, he hired all Nashville players, and they were like their normal, like, we come in at 10, we leave at 6, and Bob Dylan would even show up till 6 p.m., right?
Well, he first did that before on Blonde on Blonde.
Oh, that's
what how he met all those guys.
That's right.
Yeah. Which Blonde on Blonde's considered, like, one of his, the trilogy of his masterpieces, which is Bring It All Back Home, Highway 61, Blonde on Blonde.
Yeah.
That he made all in 2 years. But after all that shit blew up, he got into a motorcycle crash and he basically became a recluse. But he still made records.
Mm-hmm.
So he made 2 records in Nashville with the same band that he did Blonde on Blonde with.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Which was like Kenny Buttry and like a bunch of Nashville like country guys.
Yeah, it's so cool.
It's pretty cool. But anyway, dude, speaking of Masterclass, I happened to watch after the Lakers game last night, I was watching a 60 Minutes interview with Dylan from 2004 when he put his book out.
Mm-hmm.
And he never does interviews. I mean, he's maybe done 20 interviews in his whole career.
Wow.
Think about that.
That's pretty insane.
He just doesn't talk much about shit. You know, he kind of lets the work speak. And the 60 Minutes is a very serious guy interviewing him, you know? It's like it's like Charlie Rose or something. You know what I mean? It's like a very serious, and he's like, he like recites some of the lyrics of Blowing in the Wind. He's like, they say you wrote that in 5 or 10 minutes. Is that true? And Dylan's like, I think so. He's like, yeah, probably so. Probably at that time I was writing the songs really fast. And the guy goes, how did you write that song? And I love this so much. Dylan thinks about it and he goes, I don't know.
Which is true.
Which is correct.
That's correct. That's the correct answer.
He doesn't know.
Yes.
He doesn't know how he wrote Blowing in the Wind.
It just happens.
It doesn't make for a good interview or a good masterclass. I agree. I ain't going to sell. You're not going to get 180 bones for that. But God damn it, if it isn't true, Ethan.
Yeah, for real.
Anyway, one of the things that made me laugh in this chapter was, and it's a clip from the making of Hardwired, so I've seen it 100 times, but is when Greg is helping James like find harmonies for Dream No More, and he's got this little Casio.
Yeah, he does.
Beep, bop, boop, bop,
it's bop, pretty funny. Beep.
It's just such a funny, cheesy, like built-in speaker. Lap, yeah, Casio.
Well, and he has, and they show a clip of James like trying. It sounds like he's kind of trying to add like a lower harmony.
Yeah,
and then you hear Greg going, "No, that's not it." And he still has a little Casio. Bing dong, bing dong.
This is such a funny moment where I'm like, first of all, well, I think James in that area where he does vocals, which I wonder where that is in HQ. It looks like they've made a little room,
a little booth or something, yeah.
Like a booth, and they put like a flag up. But in that room, you can't see it in this chapter. But in that room, if you've watched all the other ones, he has a piano in there that he uses to like find notes and stuff.
Yeah,
but I'm like, Greg,
hold a guitar like, a lot too.
I'm like, Greg, you're making a Metallica record, dude. Maybe get like an actual MIDI controller, like that you can set to a like a more, you know, palatable sound than just beep bop boop bop that you bought at fucking Toys R Us to make a Metallica album.
That's amazing.
A few other things I did like in this chapter is talking about demoitis, which I've always called demo love.
Okay,
but that's a real thing where you make a demo, especially these days. You can make a bitchin' demo.
Oh yeah,
you can make a demo that sounds really good, but the idea of like not falling in love with it to where you can't beat it, you know. Mm-hmm. You love the weird, shitty drums on it. It's like, well, it needs to be better than that, you know?
Yeah, sometimes you can definitely, like you said, demo love, where like you sit on a demo for so long, your ears and mind just get used to what that sounds like, whether it's, you know, weird drum sound or, I don't know. I mean, there was definitely times when I've made some of my EPs or records where like I was so attached to the demo versions that it took a while in Paul's studio or whatever to like, oh, okay, no, it should sound like this, actually.
Yeah, or like when someone wants to like make a creative decision that moves it a little to the left of what the demo was, and you're like, ooh, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I really like the demo. It's like, well, yeah, but dude, that's the demo.
Yeah.
We're here to find out what it really is when we want to get it born.
And once you start a record in the studio, you've already lived with these demos for a month, 6 months, maybe a year, maybe longer. So yeah,
maybe 10 years, maybe 20 years, maybe 100 years.
Maybe they were discovered in an ice capsule thousands of years ago.
Maybe.
Maybe they were.
I mean, maybe so.
Maybe your great grandfather buried a time capsule below the local library.
Yeah.
And that was your demo.
Yeah, maybe he did.
And that's why it's tough to get away from it. Sorry.
Maybe it is. That's all I'm saying.
Listen, this is an episode of speculation, so.
Here's something I learned a long time ago from one Jay Bieber. Never say never.
That's right.
Or never say die, whichever one it is. Or is that a James Bond film?
That's James Bond, don't know. Yeah.
Okay, chapter 13, securing your band's future.
All right.
Musicians often feel tempted to give their work away for free. In this lesson, Metallica shares inspiring guidance for how to value your work and time as an artist, and how to support your band.
Honey, please.
Let's check it out.
All right.
Someone help me, or please God help me!
Okay, so, any thoughts on securing your band's future?
I thought there was some cool stuff in here. One of the things that James said pretty right off the top, that is, I would think, common knowledge amongst people starting bands or whatever, or if someone's ever asked me for advice on stuff, that he's talking about, you know, get your music out to people anywhere and everywhere. You know, I've said that to people. Now, this isn't like, you know, I wouldn't call this maybe masterclass advice, you know, because to me it sounded like, well, yeah, especially nowadays with, you know, digital distribution, it's really easy to get your music out everywhere. But I do like maybe where the sentiment came from, which is, you know, the DIY thing of like, you know, he talks about, you know, play it when your windows are rolled down at a stoplight. You know, if you're having a party, put your music on. If you're proud of your music, you let people hear it, you know. I do like that kind of DIY kind of mentality of it that maybe stems from how Metallica did start with the whole tape trading thing and stuff.
Yeah. It's like a, again, it's like a, there's a nugget in there that's good, but wrapped in a bunch of clumsy filler woo-woo shit that makes no sense. Don't be afraid to put it on Instagram. It's like, who's not doing that? Like,
yeah.
It's coming from a guy that's not on Instagram. It's like all Instagram is people promoting all their goddamn bullshit.
Exactly. So, yeah.
If anything, it's harder as a consumer or as someone who looks for something good, or even hard as an artist. How do you differentiate yourself from?
Yeah.
You know, I once heard Tom York describe the new Radiohead record, which to me is an artistic event on the level of Van Gogh. If I'm not even kidding you, dude.
Yeah, for sure.
I heard him describe that Radiohead record as a pebble in a waterfall. And this was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The nugget of it, though, that I think people need to pay attention to is here's what he's saying. He's saying, if you don't believe in what you're doing, why will anybody else?
Yeah, exactly.
If you're not proud as shit of what you're doing, why would you expect anyone else to give a fuck?
Yeah.
And it made me think of Charlie Marz, and I may have told this story before, but I did it my first ever, like the tour that we just did, which was almost 8 weeks around the whole country. The first one of those I ever did in a van, Charlie Marz was opening because he let us use his van.
Okay.
You ever done those deals before?
Yeah.
He could like open acoustic, but he was providing the van. He was paying for half the gas and he was like doing half the hotel rooms.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It was like a cheap, poor man's version of buying onto a tour.
Yeah.
So we were in his van and we were all a bunch of drunk idiots. He's a sober guy. Well, at least he wasn't drinking booze. And so this was 2009. So kind of before everyone, I don't remember what the iPod situation, you couldn't easily hook your iPod up to a van.
Mm-hmm.
In 2009, I don't remember what it was. All we had was a CD player. No one had any CDs either.
Yeah.
And the only CD in the van was his new record, which was called Like a Bird, Like a Plane.
Oh, man.
Which is a great record. J.J. Johnson on drums, Dave Monzie on bass. Charlie's a great songwriter, blah, blah, blah. But all he listened to in the van when he was... And, you know, the rules are, if you're driving, you have ultimate video on.
Driver's the DJ.
Sometimes you can let the passenger, your co-passenger help you do it because you're driving. But
yeah.
Because you might have been looking at some MapQuest printouts, which is what we used to do.
Yeah, or an atlas or something.
Or literally an atlas. So yeah. We would have like individual state atlases.
Yeah, for sure.
He would only listen to his own record. And I remember we were all passed out in the back. All of us had our own bench we'd all lay on. And I remember leaning up and catching his eye in the rear view. I was like, Charlie, because I looked at him and not only is he listening to his own record again, mm-hmm. he's like getting down to it.
Wow.
He's like up there like singing with it, bobbing his head. And I caught his eye in the rear view and I said, hey, man, are you listening to your own shit again? God damn. And I'll never forget it. He looked me dead in the eye in the rear view mirror and he said, I'm waiting for something better to come out. And I'm like, that's a man who believes in the record he just made.
He definitely does. Yeah, absolutely.
And I like it. You know,
yeah.
If you don't, why should anyone else?
Yeah. If you put out something and you don't like it, then yeah, nobody else should. I mean,
well,
I don't know.
I'm telling you, in the song game that I'm in a couple of them, a couple of these email groups where we write a song a week, blah, blah, blah. A lot of people, because artists are oftentimes insecure people, they'll write something like, here's my song this week, but it's a piece of crap. I didn't have time. Don't even listen
yeah.
to it. I'm like, hey, you know what? You just did me a favor. Because if you don't like it, I ain't listening to it.
Exactly.
I got shit to do.
I often hate the preface of something. Someone's like, I'm like, oh, hey, let me hear that new song you're working on. Like, okay, but just so you know, like, it's not really mixed yet and it's definitely not mastered. And then I haven't added this. It's like, okay, then don't send it to me. Just fucking send it. Like, hey, I still got stuff to add to it, but here you go.
I agree.
I'm stoked on it.
And you know this about me. How often do I send you shit to listen to? Almost never. But if I'm sending you something I want you to hear, I'm like, hey, dude, check this out. It fucking rips.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So anyway, all right. So we're talking about being proud of your music. That's my first note.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. James,
keeping business away from the creative process.
Yeah, I did like that talk about separating the creative side from the business side. I mean, obviously some of that has to overlap a little bit, but and even, you know, Lars talking about, you know, starting Black and Recordings and getting all their masters back. And I like that he said, we don't owe anyone anything. And talking about being independent.
I felt like that little moment with Lars, it was like a 2-minute clip where he's talking about how he's basically saying, look, don't be afraid of people calling you a sellout if you want to sell your t-shirt for a little more than what it costs so that you mm-hmm. can pay for gas for the van or whatever. I do feel like he seemed really uncomfortable talking about it.
Do you think maybe he was trying to avoid like getting into any like Napster talk or something? Or
no.
No,
I think it's hard for rich people to talk about being rich.
Yeah.
Because when he knows that he's talking to people, mostly the audience watching this are not rich people.
Right.
And so what he's basically saying is, don't be afraid to make money.
Yeah.
And now, because the underlying subtext of all that is, I made lots of money doing this. And it's okay to make money. It's, you know, mm-hmm. like they frame it under the little sub chapter heading was like, don't be afraid to support yourself as a band.
Yeah.
Which means selling shit.
But that is, you know, real talk right there. It's like,
yeah.
You know, you can't go out, you can't be a band and like, you have to spend money to do what we do.
I agreed with everything he said.
Yeah.
I just felt like I could sense his uncomfortability about it. And I wish that might have gotten fleshed out. Like, I'm telling you, like, every little thing in this, there's just these little 10 to 20% nuggets for mm-hmm. me that I'm like, there's something real here, like, really teachable,
yeah.
really interesting. And I'm almost, like, hanging on the edge of my seat for that. But it's just, they just put the bitter pill in a bunch of, you know, in a fucking hot dog.
Yeah.
To get it, to make sure the dog eats it. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
They should, it's just, it's a lot of filler, but... the only thing he said, and he says it at the very end, that I did want to talk to you about, get your perspective on, because I found this pretty, it rubbed me, is he said, you know, the whole sellout thing, he's like, if you really want to go down that road, he's like, ultimately, even being in a band itself is selling out. And I did think, like, is that true?
I made a note of that, too. Yeah, he says, being in a band to begin with is selling out, so I would end that conversation and figure out what works for you.
And then it's, you know, they hard edit to something else. And I'm right. like, I mean, that's a pretty provocative thing to say.
It is.
What does he mean? Like, do you think that's true?
I mean,
what does that mean to be in a band is to sell out? Like at the base level, like I'm thinking of myself at 12. I'm thinking of the exact garage at my house in Birmingham, Alabama, on Richmond Lane,
mm-hmm.
where I can even smell the fucking dust in that room.
Yeah,
and I'm thinking about playing the song "Big Me" by the Foo Fighters,
right,
with my band. And I can't think of anything more pure than that.
Yeah, I think
there was nothing. It could not be less of a sellout that moment.
Yeah, yeah. Or is he maybe talking about how, because, you know, we'll often joke like, oh, they sold out on the Black Album. They sold out on this. They sold out when James wore a leopard glove. You know, is he maybe trying to say, look, like people are going to say this to you right. no matter what you do.
Maybe what he means is, not the band of you and your homies in your garage. Maybe it means like a band that's really going to try to make a record, go yeah. on tour, make a t-shirt, make a MySpace page.
Yeah. Pure volume. Yeah.
I just wish there more time would have been spent on that. Like,
I know, me too. Cause I think what he was trying to say is like, you know, the second you make any money, whether that's by selling two t-shirts or 10,000 t-shirts, someone's going to be on the other side of that going, oh, it's all about the money to you, isn't it? Sell out.
Dude,
you
know, the ultimate fuck you to the guy accusing you of selling out was written by Tool. And I'm going to share some of these lyrics with you.
Okay.
The song, by the way, is called Hooker with a Penis. Can you imagine why it's called that?
I can.
Why do you think it's called that?
I mean, we're just talking about money here, and there's a hooker, and they make money. I'm taking it pretty literal here.
No.
But I want to hear these lyrics.
It's called Hooker with a Penis because it's supposedly a diehard fan who loves your band, but then he comes up to you and all he does is accuse you of selling out because he hates you now.
Okay.
So, you know, you think you're getting one thing and there's quite something else underneath that.
Copy that.
So the lyrics are, I met a boy wearing Vans 501s, a dope Beastie Tee, nipple rings, and a new tattoo that claimed that he was OGT, which means Original Gangster Tool.
Yeah.
Back from 92, had the first EP. So basically he's saying, this is an OG Tool fan.
This is a true,
this is
yeah.
a Tool true. And then it says, and in between sips of Coke, he told me he thought we were selling out, laying down, sucking up to the man. And this is the chorus. He says, I've got some advice for you, little buddy. Before you point your finger, you should know that I'm the man. And if I'm the man, then you're the man, and he's the man as well, so you can point that fucking finger up your ass.
Wow.
I met a boy wearing Van 501 and a Joe.
And he says, all you know about me is what I've sold you. I sold out long before you ever heard my name. I sold my soul to make a record, dipshit, and you bought one.
That's powerful.
Dude, he says, all you read and wear or see and hear on TV is a product begging for your fat ass dirty dollar. So shut up and buy my new record. Send more money. Fuck you, buddy.
Wow. And that person probably did. But it's true though, man. It's like anything we do see on TV or here on the radio or in record stores, it's all a product, right?
Absolutely.
And so maybe that's kind of what Lars is talking about. It's like the second you have any product, to someone, it's going to be a form of selling out. The second you're a musician from your hometown, and then all of a sudden you get in a band, you start going on tour, and then all your other buddies that never did that all of a sudden kind of have a grudge against you just because you gained some little bit of success or something. Because you worked a little bit harder, maybe, you know, there's always going to be that person that's pointing the finger. Like,
it's interesting to hear. I'm thinking about our bandmate, our buddy Johnny Sword, who comes from a small town in Virginia,
yeah.
who is, you know, on this awesome tour that we're on. And I've never really experienced that. I never really had that in Birmingham. But he talks about how there are people from his hometown that are like really bitter about his success.
Oh yeah,
and I find that really fascinating because I just never, if there was, dude, I mean, I got the fuck out of my hometown as soon as I could.
Yeah.
And I never really looked back. So I don't even know if there was a narrative about that. Did you experience that?
Yeah. From a few different people. And there is still one person that I literally haven't talked to in real life in probably 20 years. But every once in a while, I'll get a message from this person. And it's kind of, hey, stoked you're still doing this, blah blah blah, but then it's like a pity party guilt trip thing, like I'm supposed to feel bad that he never made it, right. quote unquote, you know,
right.
It's to me that's just pathetic.
Yeah, I,
you know, it's sad and not in a way where I feel bad for this person. I just, it's like, yeah. Look, I worked my ass off, I never looked back, I was always looking forward. I moved
to
Nashville.
You never said die, and you never said never.
I listened to the Biebs, and that's I attribute all my success to that. And to quote the great Rick Astley, I am never going to give you up.
Right.
You know, never going to let you down. Talking to myself, of course.
Well, the closest thing I've ever had to that, it just happened to me when we were in Seattle. I don't know if I told you this, but my best friend when I was a kid who I learned to play guitar with, I've talked about him on this podcast.
Oh, he called you out of the blue.
He called me out of the blue. I haven't talked to him in 10 years. And he was like, hey, dude, he was like, I somehow heard your, he's like, I knew you did a podcast, but he's like, I've listened to, he was like, I was thinking about Load and Reload, which is our era,
yeah.
as I've talked about for years. And he was like, it made me remember that you did a podcast. He's like, I went and listened to like 5 episodes. He's like, I fucking love it. It's like, got me excited about the band. It made me think yeah. about you. And he was like, I guess I should have texted or something. He's like, I just wanted to call you. And I couldn't even believe his number was in my phone.
Yeah.
And, he was a great guitar player. Like, he's the reason that I play guitar. He's the guy that I've said, my best friend got a guitar and I didn't see him for 6 months.
Yeah.
And so I got a guitar just so I could keep hanging out with my buddy because I missed him.
Right.
This is that guy.
Yeah.
And he was in like a pretty successful like cover band and, but he hasn't played guitar. He was like, he hasn't picked up a guitar in years. And that's as close as I've gotten to a conversation that might've been him being resentful or bummed. He was happy as hell for me.
That's cool.
He's doing something different now and, you know, having a good life and he's got a bunch of kiddos and I just can't imagine what I would say to him if he was like butthurt about it. It's a sad thing. It is sad.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, to the musicians that are maybe that way that have that kind of bitterness inside of them, I can guarantee that I've experienced as a musician on the road in this business way more heartbreak than maybe you're experiencing by just giving up playing guitar, you know?
Yeah, try putting on a record no one cares about.
Right.
That's pretty painful.
Shit, I mean, try getting fired, you know, from a gig for, and literally, the, you know, there's nothing positive things to say about you, but that's just the decision. Oh, well, sorry, bye-bye. You know,
well, it's like, you know that I've been there too.
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
It's doing what we do is extremely difficult.
It is, yeah.
I mean, I saw someone criticize Halsey on Twitter, of course, the battleground of cowards.
Yeah.
And they were like, she was tweeting about the Lakers and she was like, hey, sorry. She was like, I've been super swamped with work, but I just want to dip in and say like Laker Nation or whatever.
Yeah.
And someone wrote, oh, Halsey acting like she has a 9-to-5.
Oh, my God.
And she wrote, actually, I have a 24/7. And it's like, that's so true. Like, I was thinking about her as an artist. Like, think about what our boss, Morgan, is going through with Sony. dude, they've got her working around the clock.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Halsey's got a Grammy-nominated album that's different than anything she's ever done, produced by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. She's on a press whirlwind. And it really is a 24... Like, dude, a 9 to 5, you get to clock out.
Yeah.
You get to go home and you get to turn your emails off. When you do what we do, dude, anytime my phone rings or I'm getting emails, I can't... I don't know if you're like this, but like... Anytime my phone rings and it's a 615 number, I take the call because who knows what gig it could be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's usually someone wanting to sell me a new warranty for my car.
I only answer the ones that say spam risk. Because it could be a gig.
It could be a really great band from the UK called Spam Risk.
Exactly.
Anyway, but yeah, dude, this job is not easy, I guess is what I was trying to get.
Yeah, for sure. Simple example is, I mean, you know, last Monday and this Monday, the episodes are a little late because we were on the road and things get busy. And, you know, I mean, yeah, it is 24/7. I mean, I've gotten phone calls at 6 a.m, like, hey, last minute thing, can you be somewhere at 9 a.m. for this session? Yeah, sure. I'll get up right now and shower and get my shit together. You know, we don't clock in at 8 a.m. and then all of a sudden the phone calls start coming in, you know?
Right.
So right. I think people get the point.
The last thing Kirk talks about that I thought was interesting was he talks about merch, which can you imagine, like, just the merch in the 80s and 90s? But even now, I mean, our friends in really big bands now, I hear about some of their merch nights, and it's like, you know, Taylor Swift doing like 150K a night in merch only. Yeah. It's like, oh my God, there's still so much money. But Kirk talks about, I thought this was actually interesting that someone might not know, as he's like, you get advances with these different departments of what you're doing. You get an advance for a tour. And then he's like, you can kind of use those advances. There's like a lot of tales about people misusing those. If you get an advance for a tour, usually what that means is go get some clothes, go get some gear.
Yeah.
Some dudes might buy a car, you know?
Yeah. Maybe put it towards the van or something like that.
Or you get an advance to make your record. And then dudes buy whatever, you know, drugs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But he's talking about using the merch advance to fund another part of what you're doing.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool and pretty smart, interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I thought that was real cool. Yeah. And you know, it was kind of fun hearing him talk about like the past, them getting started with merch, making like 2 t-shirt designs back in 83.
Yeah.
Then getting, you know, signed into Elektra and then getting to a bigger merchandise company. And then that goes into what you're talking about. But I just enjoy the more I watch these, you know, I'm mostly tuned into James.
Yeah.
But the more I just adore Kirk. He kind of, you know, like myself, there's still like this little kid inside of me at all times. And I see that in Kirk a lot.
I just find myself hoping he lands the things he starts. Like yeah. It's like every time he starts, he takes off in a little prop plane, you know, that's got a greeny Les Paul painted on it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Love him for it. I hope he lands the plane.
Yeah. This one has a little turbulence from time to time.
And he does say at the end, and this is, again, part of the filler frou-frou stuff that just sounds good for a second. He's like, well, ultimately, it's all about the music, which I'm like, okay. I mean, okay. And then he's like, if you make crap music, you're not going to sell merch. I'm like, well, I don't know about that. You can have an idea about your music that has nothing to do with whether or not it's good.
Yeah.
Sell lots of tickets and lots of merch.
Right.
If you kind of do the things they're also saying to do in it, which is like brand yourself and
yeah.
Don't be afraid to have a cool t-shirt. And you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Okay. The next one is called Taking Charge of Your Creative Destiny.
Yeah, yes. What's funny is when I originally read that title before we started recording, I read it in that voice in my head. This is the word destiny.
Well, yeah. Well, what we've done is we've created a character that is timeless and that will live on in the imaginations of our listeners for literally probably the rest of their lives. It's just a little thing called making magic.
That magic is carried over into the real world. I mean, me and Clint will be doing that voice on stage during soundcheck sometimes.
Absolutely.
It goes beyond the boundaries of a podcast.
By the way, my favorite part of all of our soundchecks became easily playing Wicked Garden.
We played Wicked Garden like the whole second leg of the tour.
I would want to get like, because the problem is soundchecks, and the reason that opening up a noodle shop at soundcheck annoys me so much is like we actually are there to like achieve something, like
sure,
we need to make sure that our set's gonna sound good, and we're dealing with a new front of house engineer every night who needs to be sort of caught up to speed. But if we can get that part of it done quick and we've got some time left over, some
jam time,
hitting Wicked Garden, dude. And that turned in, we did a little cumbersome.
There's a couple of days where we kept throwing them out. Dude, one day we did Man in the Box. That was
Man in the Box. Yeah, all from memory. Parker, our drummer, is like, dude, will you please just give me a list of songs that we might do? Because he was like, I just really want to learn them. I don't want to sound sloppy. Yeah.
I'm like, that okay. would actually be really fun, is to have just like an ongoing list of covers.
Yeah,
that we can just pull from, that, you know, the backing band can just start jamming out.
Let's pause our current masterclass to get back to this Metallica masterclass.
Okay, yes.
Because we're giving them the real sauce, baby. And you know what? It ain't going to cost you 180 bones.
That's right.
I feel, I don't know, stronger or cooler when I call money bones.
Bones, yeah.
I don't even know where that comes from. Is that like a 90s gangster movie thing?
Maybe. My dad used to call it lettuce.
Ooh, because it's green.
He's like, yo, give me some lettuce.
All right, the last chapter, chapter 14, taking charge of your creative destiny. Metallica gives parting advice on how to embrace the challenge in your journey, harness collaborative energy, and take risks as you keep an eye on the possibilities just around the corner. See, I like the guy who wrote these little blurby blurbs.
They're really good.
These blurbs have a lot of panache to them. Well, let's watch this together, and then we'll reconvene, and we'll share our thoughts.
Sounds good.
Brad, tick, 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 tock!
All right, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, again, not to, you know, harp on this, but it is a lot of little golden nuggets wrapped around a lot of just safe things to say, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
We finally get to, this is kind of when Rob finally shows up in this one. I love Rob talking about, you know, challenging each other as a band, you know, where it's like, hey, that's not good enough. You can do better. You know, that's one of those things in, whether you're in a band like we are, where you're playing for an artist, or you're in an actual collaborative band writing songs together, that kind of stuff you need. You know, you don't want everyone to just say, hey, that was great all the time, because you're never going to get better, you know?
Yeah.
And so I did like that he talked about that a bit.
I agree. I do too. And that's, you know, I think that's part of his call, like his role, is to be that guy that's willing to do that. I mean, I don't know if I'm the guy that's going to be able to tell James that could be better.
Right.
You know, like a band leader-ish type thing comes natural to me. I feel comfortable with it. I feel like there's a balance between making the people around you feel empowered and like confident, while also being able to say, hey, that can be better. You know, like all of those dynamics are intuitive to me, but to do it to James Hetfield, or, you know, big talk happening in the musical world right now is this Beatles documentary.
Right.
You're watching those dudes give each other some pretty intense feedback.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the greatest thing about it is you're just watching the greatest band in the world act like a normal band.
Yeah, goofing around.
And goofing around and being goofy and being grumpy and not sounding great. Some of the time it sounds as good as anything. Like when they just start, when John and Paul are like remembering their old songs and just locking into them.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, these dudes are beyond human. But then when they're kind of trying to figure something out and it stinks, you're like, oh, they stink too sometimes.
Yeah, they're human beings. Look at that.
Like that harmony doesn't work, and you know, that doesn't sound good. You know?
Yeah. I've been loving watching the Get Back stuff. I finished the second part last night.
So you're what, 5 hours deep?
Yeah. Part two is 3 hours long. And I'm planning on watching the other one. I got to meet some friends for a birthday thing tonight, but when I get home, I'm watching the final part tonight.
Talk about a masterclass, dude. You really, I mean, I was actually, I was on Twitter, but with Dave Ferrara last night, and he's like, hey, you know, I think I'm going to check out this new Beatles doc. You know, he's like, I trust you guys.
And yeah.
I'm like, hey, man, maybe don't start with this Get Back documentary, dude.
It's deep, man. It's, and by that, I mean, it's just really long. And I think, and you and I and Paul have been texting about this. I think it's definitely geared towards musicians, songwriters, bands, things like that. Like, again, I've seen a lot of my own friends post about it that maybe aren't musicians or songwriters that are like, this is boring as shit. Why couldn't they edit all this 80 hours down to one, you know? And maybe that would have been fucking awesome. But yeah, I mean, for guys like you and I or Paul, it's like, I mean, I'm literally, when I'm watching it, I'm like, mentally, I'm in the room, and I'm like a guy in the corner that's not allowed to say a word. I'm just listening or watching and learning.
I mean, they could put out a 2-hour episode every Sunday for the next 10 years, and I'm A-okay. The thing that's so funny to me about people are like, it's so boring. This is, who's asking for this? I'm like, well, first of all, Beatles fans would have loved to see this. But it's like, no one's forcing you to watch it, you dumbass.
Totally.
Like, there's so many things in the world that I think are boring to watch. I just simply don't watch them.
You know what I do? Here's my method. This is a masterclass on
here we go. Professor Ethan, let's hear it.
Professor Luck at the podium. Everyone pay attention. Class, please. Here's what I'll say. If someone's like, hey, you should check this out, I will start to check it out. If within maybe 20 or 30 minutes, I'm not feeling any of it, guess what I do? I turn it off. Bye-bye. Now, if there's something that catches me a little bit, like when you recommended Brawl on Cell Block 99,
mm-hmm.
within the first 10 minutes, I'm like, this is rad. Great recommendation by Clint, you know? But that's the thing. If you're watching this Beatles thing and you're not a musician maybe and you find it boring, go find something exciting to watch.
People just like to shit on the Beatles. It's a way for them to feel edgy or contrarian.
Yeah.
Especially in this cultural moment where everyone is now conditioned to like be outraged or have a you know, forgive my NBA euphemisms, but they want to dunk on something. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Yeah.
So it's easy to like try to dunk on the Beatles because the Beatles are the greatest band of all time. And this documentary is tedious. It's not meant to be like the one I recommended to Dave, that I would recommend to you and whoever is listening. If you want the Beatles story, there was a BBC documentary in the mid-90s. It's called Beatles Anthology.
It's great.
We watch it every year in my house. It's required viewing in the Wells family. And it is a beautifully edited and beautifully told story of the Beatles. And it's before George died. So he's in it. And it's when I don't know if people remember this, but they took an old John Lennon. They took two old John Lennon demos and finished them.
Mm-hmm.
They did a song called Free as a Bird and a song called Real Love, where they took his piano demos, and it's basically the last collaboration of the four original right. Beatles. It's fucking beautiful. And they made albums that came out with it. It's called Beatles Anthology.
And that's their whole career. This is just
it's their
one
whole
moment.
Story.
Yeah, this is get back is one moment in time.
Get back is the story of like a massive microscopic deep dive into probably the darkest few months in the band.
Yeah.
And it's not really even telling a story, really. It's almost raw footage of them writing and performing and arguing and
yeah.
putting a show together.
Yeah.
So anyway, people have an idea. You know, that's the new thing. The new thing is it doesn't matter what's true. It just matters what your idea is. And bonus points if that idea can either slam dunk on the internet or you can be outraged or
yeah.
you can have a little pithy fucking butthurt remark about it.
Yeah, exactly.
The Beatles documentary literally no one asked for.
Who it's wants like, to watch this? It's like, come
it's
on.
It's like, well, go watch Americans. What's the thing that everyone, the thing where you wear a mask and you got to guess who the singer is because they're wearing a mask?
The Masked Singer.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go watch The Mask. Okay. Go watch a great American Ninja Warrior where people are jumping on ropes and they fall into water at the end. Go watch Floor is Lava.
Yeah.
Go watch the fucking cooking show where you have to make, you know, little gingerbread houses out of fondant.
Yeah.
This ain't for you, baby.
It's not for you. Yeah. Yeah. The one post I saw from a friend basically trying to dunk on this documentary. And then in the comments, I'm not even going to get into that comment fight there. But one of the comments was like, it's definitely for hardcore Beatles fans. And she replied and said, I'm not even a Beatles fan at all. I'm like, then why do you even try to watch it?
Well, first of all, you're not a Beatles fan at all. How?
How?
How and why?
How?
It's probably because you just haven't checked it out. I can't imagine someone listening to a reasonable sampling. Because they grew a lot in 10 years. I mean,
oh, yeah.
from Please Please Me to fucking Revolution 9 is a lot of sauce.
Oh, it is. Yeah, for sure.
But an actual like curated smattering, if you hear that and go, I don't like this. It's like, well, the problem ain't the Beatles. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I even feel that way about David Bowie, which is way harder to listen to. But yeah. when I don't get David Bowie, when it's hard for me, I don't assume that it's David Bowie. I assume that there's a flaw and I'm not ready.
Yeah,
that's actually what I assume.
You're not prepared. It'll happen.
Hopefully. If I don't like Cannibal Corpse, and I listen, I've done this with Cannibal Corpse. I've listened to a song from like every couple of years of their records.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe 15 songs. That's not for me.
If there's nothing there in 15 songs, then it's not for you. So, and I say move on and find something that is for
but
you.
But how could you hear Yesterday or
oh my
Blackbird
God.
Or Let It Be? Or Strawberry Fields Forever, or All You Need Is Love, or With a Little Help from My Friends, or Revolution, or, you know,
it's
pick
insane.
15 of those and be like, no, that sucks.
Ew, that's bad music. I mean, and there might be people out there that only listen to maybe, let's say they just listen to metal and that's it. And then I feel sorry for those people because it's like you're missing out on so much music in the world, not just the Beatles. But I don't know, man. I guess I was just fortunate enough to have an awesome dad that turned me on to the Beatles. He's like, you need to listen to this. And like the first CD he gave me of the Beatles was Rubber Soul. And I was just like, mm-hmm. dude, this is so cool.
Yeah. I mean, go listen to Rubber Soul like in its entirety, dude. Drive My Car, Norwegian Wood.
Yeah.
Think Michelle. For Yourself. Michelle. Yeah. Man, awesome. Awesome record. Okay, well, let's talk about this chapter.
Welcome to the Taking Beatles Podcast. Risks.
They do talk about S&M and Lulu. They talk about taking chances. I liked all that. They're trying to see what's around the corner. I think yeah. we've talked about that for years with this band. That, you know, Metallica, and this is going to annoy some people, but they're like a Bob Dylan. They're like a Beatles. They're like a U2. They're like a Madonna. They're like a Peter Gabriel. They're these artists that, in spite of their insane success, Michael Jackson was like this too. In spite of their insane success, and Prince, they are always looking for something different. They're yeah. turning a corner.
They're true musicians.
They could have made Master Puppets parts 2, 3, 5, 10, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But for them to keep reaching for something different, the reach from Puppets to Justice is real obvious to me.
Yeah.
They wanted to take it to the, to the limit one more time. They wanted to take it to the limit to see how proggy and fast and intricate they could be. Yeah. And then when they did that,
cool, goal achieved.
As far as I'm concerned, they're the kings of that. That's the best album of that I've ever heard.
Yeah.
They could have done a part two of that, and I believe they would go on to do a part two of that in a little record called Death Magnetic 20 years later or whatever. But instead, they were like, well, what's next? Black Album. Okay.
Yeah.
They made the best commercial metal album ever. Other than maybe Back in Black or maybe Highway to Hell.
Yeah.
Maybe Paranoid. There's like a few things you could throw in there.
Yeah, sure.
After that, what'd they do?
Maybe Time, Love, and Tenderness.
Dude, look, can I touch you there? But then they made Load and Reload, which bummed everyone out, but it was just them reaching, right?
Yeah.
Then they did the thing with the symphony. Then they did Saint Anger, you know? Then you get your Lulus, you get your... that's what I love about them.
I know.
That's what makes them artists worth paying attention to for 40 years.
I've always admired that about them, that they're, even if it's something I don't really dig, it's the goal they set for themselves and they finish it out and they achieve it. Then they move on to the next one. And I love that about them, you know?
Yeah. I don't like every Prince record. I don't like every U2 record.
Yeah.
And I'm a huge fan of both of those artists.
Sure.
Who are the other artists I named that evolve? Peter Gabriel, same, got some stuff that I don't understand.
Yeah, for sure.
Some bands go into places that you can't follow. And I think that's what they did with Lulu, you know? They went somewhere creatively that was just really hard for a big portion of their fan base, myself included. I went into that room with them, and in the room, I couldn't stay there long.
I mean, you know, Bob Dylan's got a lot of weird shit. Tom Waits.
That's a great example. Bob Dylan has a lot of stuff that is difficult.
Yeah.
You know? And he was an artist who constantly, he would make a thing that was like the best of whatever version of that was ever made.
Yeah.
And everyone would be like, please just stay there. We like this. We want more of this.
Yeah.
He's moved on before you even fucking know it.
Yeah, exactly.
And there is no rearview mirrors in the car he's driving.
Yeah.
Literally, you know what I mean?
The big documentary
about him is called Don't Look Back.
Yeah.
Because the motherfucker was just always trying to figure out what the next thing was.
I would much rather, as an artist myself and a fan of other artists, I would much rather, you know, listen to an artist that is continually evolving. Now, maybe the core sound of what they do is still kind of there. Like, let's say like a Green Day or something. Like they haven't gone too far into left field, except their last record. But they've always evolved, and the songs have gotten better, and the production's gotten better, and the musicianship's gotten better. I don't know. I prefer artists like that. I'm willing to sacrifice a couple sneaky albums if it means, you know, they're staying true to themselves and constantly moving forward.
I 100% agree.
So
I think Pearl Jam also did that.
Yeah.
Most of the great ones do. Now, you got your AC/DCs out there.
Your Ramones, yeah.
You got your Ramones. You know, there's a fucking exception to everything we're saying. But I do think, in general, the great artists evolve. And it's what Kirk, and you know, to end this chapter, it's what Kirk, what I think humorously and poignantly referred to as chasing the creative dragon.
Chasing the creative dragon roar.
So then we get some performances, which I thought all the performances, I mean, they were obviously
kick ass.
They were obviously like edited and mixed well.
Oh yeah, for sure.
By Greg and Co. But Whiplash, it's cool seeing Kirk with his new gold Jackson V.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool guitar.
We get Bells. I liked them. Bells. James is playing one of his, you know, it's one of those like 58. It's a Carina Explorer.
The Carina Explorer, yeah. That's a 58, yeah.
Like, he's playing one of his, because I know he collects a few of those.
Yeah.
Because the boys have a whole guitar collection of shit that they don't ever play.
I know. I mean,
they actually like invest in guitars and stuff.
How cool would it be to go take a tour of HQ one day?
I wonder if their personal collections, though, are at HQ.
I could see maybe, I mean, I'm sure James probably has some really valuable stuff at his one of his homes.
Right.
I would be shocked if there wasn't like a fucking huge ass safe there or something that some like priceless stuff goes into or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean,
or maybe they have a vault somewhere. Like,
yeah.
Because I know they've bought some of those guitars like as investments.
Yes, for sure.
But I bet Greeny stays at HQ.
Greeny stays on Kirk at all times.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
He takes it with him.
He literally, when the show's done, his tech like cases it up and, you know, at the end of the night, walks it back to him. When he gets on the plane to go home, it's with him.
Now that I think about it, whenever he's at home in Hawaii, it's always there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that doesn't stay at HQ.
I remember asking Wes that one time. I'm like, man, how do they, like, Greeny's just transported in a guitar vault? He's like, oh, no. That goes with Kirk everywhere, which so makes sense.
Who was I listening to recently? Was it Mike McCready? He was talking about, it was someone talking about Mike McCready. It was Stone Gossard, actually. It was Stone Gossard on the Dean Del Rey podcast,
yeah.
Which I'm not a huge Dean Del Rey guy, but he's had some pretty good interviews lately.
Cool.
One of them being Stone Gossard, who barely does interviews. And he's talking about some chick he knew gave Mike a haircut once. And she was like, yeah, it was really weird because he had like a 58 Strat with him to get his haircut. No case.
Yeah. Like he just bought it.
Like he got out of the car to go get the haircut and he was just holding a loose Strat. He's just one of those guys, you know?
It's almost like he just left a music store and like, yeah, we have this 58 Strat, but no case. Sorry. He's like, I'll take it. But I got to get a haircut next.
Or like his PA is like, Mike, your car's here to go get your haircut. He's like, cool. Let me grab one thing real quick. And he just grabs a Strat out of his music room or whatever. He's like, just wants to jam on it in the car.
Yeah.
And then he's not going to leave it in the car. I don't know. I just find that funny. That like is, you look, dude, go look at any, I don't know what era, maybe late 80s to mid 90s, like interviews with Yngwie Malmsteen in his studio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he plays that like yellow Strat.
Yeah. It was called beveled frets or something.
The scalloped.
Scallop. That's what it is.
Scalloped frets. In his studio, there's like a corner, no guitar stands where I'm telling you, there's maybe 30 or 40 of these guitars just stacked on each other.
Just leaning against each other. The guitar is the guitar stand.
Yeah, he just puts another one on the pile. It's unbelievable.
Could you
it's
imagine like, going to Paul's studio and you know he's got all those acoustics and they're all in individual stands. If they're all just on top of each other, like I want that one in the back. Like it's going to take 30 minutes to get to.
It looked exactly like what Paul's acoustic world looks like, minus guitar stands.
That's amazing.
I'm like, dude, what is wrong with you? It's something kind of fun about it.
Yeah.
So they do puppets. I found this interesting about puppets. I don't know if you notice this. So the main verse riff, da 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 da.
Yeah.
Those are power chords on the record and traditionally. He's only playing the root notes now. I don't know how long he's been doing that.
I don't either. Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, it's still cool. It still sounds cool.
But instead of doing that, like, you know, the 5 and 7 to make an A.
Yeah.
He's just doing the roots.
The single notes. Almost like the Hardwired riff.
Almost like the Hardwired riff. That's right.
That's so crazy.
Kind of like the That Was Just Your Life riff as well.
Yeah.
It sounds almost the same. So, you know, I think we're going to start seeing an era where these guys are going to be taking some shortcuts to get to the finish line because this music is so physically demanding and, you know, time waits for no man.
I mean, you have to at a certain age and a certain point, your body's going to let you know like, hey, time to adjust this, you know, like, you know, we've already seen it as James has gotten older. Like James can't put his guitar down by his knees and hunch over a microphone like he used to. That's bad for the old back. That's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So his guitar is higher. He stands up straighter. You know, those things, you know, come into play.
They play one, and it's interesting. Kirk's lead tone was unusually chorusy.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And it's interesting. I'm like, who makes these decisions? Like, you know, my tone might evolve a little bit from night to night, depending on what I'm kind of feeling or whatever, but to make a big chorus decision on a kind of a naked, clean part, it seems like, was that a decision like in post?
I mean, or maybe they, you know, maybe they were all in HQ when Greg and them were mixing it and just kind of threw out some ideas. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was an interesting choice, but didn't bother me or anything. I thought
it was cool. It's a great performance.
Sound great.
They end with Sandman, and then they kind of tag Sandman with Hardwired, which I thought was pretty fun.
Yeah, that was cool.
That might be a fun thing to see in the future is like tagging Hardwired onto a staple, you know?
Yeah.
Well, my friend, I am pleased to announce that we are here in the graduation ceremony.
Oh my gosh.
And congratulations. You were the valedictorian this year.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. Oh my gosh. I just want to say to my fellow classmates that I love you. Dream big dreams and my heart will go on with you. I should have had a speech prepared, but I didn't know I was going to be valedictorian until just now. So I'm honored. I'm humbled. And I think it's time to turn the tassels to the other side.
And we celebrate on this day our graduation day.
Our independence.
Well, I am glad we got through it, and all I could really do, Ethan, is give my honest opinion about it, which I believe I did, and I hope that many out there learned a lot from it.
Yeah,
and you know, it was an interesting little chapter in the ever being written Metallica book.
You're right. Yeah,
but I am glad it's over, and we can move on and start to talk about some other fun stuff. And
exactly, got some cool giveaways coming up soon. And I'm just excited we're home a little bit more this month around the holidays.
Me too.
You know, even January is, I think we don't have much going on the first 2 weeks, which will be nice. But we're thankful for you all out there. We hope you all had a good Thanksgiving, good holiday, and going into Christmas, New Year's, all that good stuff, and you're with some people you love.
Couldn't agree more. Peace.
Adios.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.